Hello, and welcome to Sonoran Desert Institute's School of Firearms Technology's official podcast, The Gun Rack. Hello, and welcome to The Gun Rack, Sonoran Desert Institute's School of Firearms Technology's official podcast. I'm Josiah Upper. Folks, call me Joey, and today we're continuing a series that I left off kind of abruptly a long time ago. Back in April, I think, we talked a little bit about military history, and we went from Chapter 1, which if you didn't check it out, go ahead and hop back on sonorandesertinstitute.podbean.com and check that out. It's the Battle of Lexington and Concord, and now we are doing the Battle of Bunker Hill, which should probably be called the Battle of Breed's Hill. So, the Battle of Bunker Hill was fought on June 17th, 1775. It immediately preceded the battles of Lexington and Concord that kicked off the Revolutionary War. Those battles were fought on April 19th, 1775, April 18th, 1775, being the famous ride. So our source today, aside from the fact that I studied history in college, my brush-up source today is going to be history.com. Thank you, history.com, courtesy of author history.com editors. Apparently they like their anonymity. So back to the topic at hand. June 17th, 1775, very, very early in the Revolutionary War, which ran from 1775 to 1783. The British had just beaten the Americans during the battles of Lexington and Concord. The Americans were beaten at the battles of Lexington and Concord, but they also showed that they could inflict some serious casualties on the British when they felt like it, and they could stand up to what was believed to be the greatest military machine on earth. It also gave heart to the Patriots, the New England Patriots, shout out, football, during the Siege of Boston, which was to come very shortly thereafter. So, on June 16th, 1775, American troops figured out that the British were planning to send troops from Boston to occupy the hills surrounding the town. So about 1,000 militiamen under a Colonel William Prescott built fortifications on top of Breed's Hill overlooking Boston that is located on the Charlestown Peninsula. And that's directly from history.com. An important note here is that the men that fortified on Breed's Hill had been ordered to build these fortifications on Bunker Hill, but instead they chose Breed's Hill because it was closer to Boston. Unfortunately for those militiamen, they had two problems. One, the problem that the Continentals would often find when facing the British, especially early in the war. They were not facing British militiamen, they were facing British regulars. And as the narrative goes, British militiamen, militiamen in general, are famous for having low discipline, for falling apart in the field, and for electing their own officers, which, as you might imagine, makes the officers in question spineless when it comes to enforcing hard rules. Essentially, you are doing a popularity contest 9 times out of 10 when it comes to electing officers. That was not the case for every militia unit ever, but it was the case for many of them. And all of these things put together, militiamen do not equal regulars, even on a good day. So that's problem one. Problem two is that Major General William Howe and Brigadier General Robert Pigott, I am hoping I am pronouncing that correctly, P-I-G-O-T, it could be Peugeot, but they're British. These two men, aside from being very experienced military officers, had numbers as well as skill and the advantage of training in their men. They had 2,200 British forces under their command. So on June 17th, they come out, they land on Charlestown Peninsula, and then marched up to Breed's Hill. As the British Army advanced, they advanced in columns, which, for those of you that aren't history nerds like me, means that they are not advancing in what would be considered a serious fighting line. It's more of a advance line, so it could well be that the, and this is just me taking a guess, so please don't hold me to this, but it could well be that the British advanced on Breed's Hill hoping that the Americans would break and run, or that one or two volleys from a small group of people in the front would take care of the issues. Prescott reportedly, and this is the American commander, reportedly told the Americans, don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes. However, that has been attributed to many, many, many other people over the course of the years, and it is very likely, as Mike Duncan says in his podcast Revolutions that I've referenced here earlier in the show, that this was never said at all. Sorry for romantics, that one hurt me too. But all that being said, when the Redcoats came within a couple of dozen yards, the Americans opened fire, and they opened fire with volley fire downhill at close range. And what that means is that the British were thrown into a chaotic retreat, and they were wise to do so. No one wants to march uphill into the face of withering fire. However, the British, being extremely disciplined, and Howe being regarded as one of the great military leaders of the war, the British reformed their lines and attacked again. However, pretty much the exact same thing happened. However, on top of that, sorry to say however twice there, Prescott's men were not very heavily supplied to begin with, and now on the second attack, they had expended most of their ammunition. So when the Redcoats, the British regulars, went up the hill for the third time, they actually made it to the fortifications and engaged the Americans in hand-to-hand combat. And I don't care how many men made it to the top. Once you get there in hand-to-hand combat and you have men coming up behind you, you've really lost most or all of the advantage the fortifications can give you. Now the numbers of the British massed in columns coming up behind one another to replace one another as they go can really come into effect. The Americans were forced to retreat, but by the end of the battle, the casualties were preposterously high. The Patriots had cut down, this is according to history.com, some 1,000 enemy troops, with more than 200 killed and more than 800 wounded. That's a lot. The Americans, on the other hand, suffered horrendous casualties, but not nearly as bad. More than 100 Americans died, while more than 300 were wounded. That's out of 1,000 militiamen. That's 40% casualties. And when you look at the British forces, losing 1,000 of 2,200 is actually a little bit worse. They're both horrible. 3 weeks later, at the very end, to wrap this story up, I know this is a short one, July 2nd, 1775, one George Washington arrived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to take command of the Continental Army. So, at the end of the day, the British did win the Battle of Bunker Hill, which really should have been the Battle of Breed's Hill, and the Charlestown Peninsula and Breed's Hill itself fell to British control because the Americans were forced to fall back. However, just like the battles of Lexington and Concord, the battle was a huge morale builder for the Americans because they just learned that they could stand up to the British. And not only could they stand up to the British and bloody their nose, they could stand up to the British and cut down more than 40% of their attacking forces. On the converse side, the British, when they won their victory at the Battle of Bunker Hill, they realized that this was going to be a long, long, expensive, and bloody road. We see this over and over again. The one that always comes to my mind is the Battle of Guilford Courthouse. in which the British won the field. And of course, this is much closer to the end of the war, but the British won the field, but lost a third of their army. That's kind of the name of the game for the British during a lot of the American Revolution, is winning battles that were ultimately going to lose wars. George Washington lost a whole lot of battles, but he still came out on top. And that's because he knew how to inflict casualties and how to create a flawless retreat, which sounds like some kind of taunt, but seriously, George Washington is one of the best generals in military history in terms of being capable to organize a retreat that does not turn into a rout. So, for now, that is a very brief history of the Battle of Bunker Hill. If you want to learn more, I always encourage doing so. You can learn more about the American Revolution at Revolution's podcast with Mike Duncan. He does the Revolutionary War extensively, and I highly recommend it. That's where I learn a lot of my information before passing it on to you. So for now, that's the gun rack. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you at the range. Sonoran Desert Institute is an online school located at 1555 West University Drive in Tempe, Arizona, accredited by the DEAC. For more information, please call 800-336-8939 or visit sbi.edu.